Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about Liberty Herbicide. In our spotlight, we'll give you a GDU update. Ag History Minute, we're going to talk about the history of Liberty Herbicide. Cool Beans, that's Corny. We'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Oh, we had such a nice run going, and then we got like an inch and a half of rain last night, which, granted, it was getting dry-ish in places. Some of it was welcome, maybe not the whole inch and a half, but, you know, it was all right.
Very spotty. Certain places, Berlin, Wisconsin, got like 5 inches, so certain places got dumped on, and
I saw
certain places got...
an article about Manawa getting heavy rain again. What, like a month, within a month of the last time they got heavy rain. So
it just seems like it comes hard. That like we just get these blasts, right? It hasn't been slow and steady this year. It's been just poor.
No, that storm specifically had a lot of green to it, and then all of a sudden red cells that would just lay over places and just hammer.
When
them,
I watched a couple apps and like, by 4 o'clock, it looked like it was just going to disappear.
Right,
and then all of a sudden, I'm like, "That's coming. Like it's just keeps coming, and it got worse, not going away." So, I don't think they quite got it right last night.
Do they ever? Come on,
no.
It almost feels like tropical out there this year. Just it's like a greenhouse. You got a humidity. It's been hot enough, but honestly, not unbearably hot. It's just that humid.
That's
I feel
today, Todd.
Yes,
today, tomorrow.
No, it's. I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying it hasn't been hot. I'm just saying this is perfect corn growing weather. That's all I'm saying. That it's been good.
It's pollinating. Some of it's pollinating right now.
Yeah, but that moisture will help with that a little bit.
The moisture will. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big range though of that pollination.
Yes. Right. Oh, my God. Right. Within a field.
Yeah.
And then within, neighboring fields. And
it's almost like we needed this, like, dry stretch and this weather, like, a month ago.
Right.
Not that some of it doesn't need it now.
Todd, how does your late planted corn look?
If you didn't look at the calendar, it looks great. Honestly,
I was in a field yesterday that was just above my knees, and I was going to text the farmer, this corn looks great for July 3rd.
Right.
And it's basically August 3rd.
No, knee-high by the 4th of August.
Yes.
Yeah. It's even, and it's super green, and it looks great.
All the plants are there.
Yeah.
The weed control seems to be good. Yeah, I do not have a problem with it. It just it got out of bed a little too late.
A lot of too late.
Yes. I'm just hoping some of that we can get, say we're at waist high right now. Can we get it to tassel in September sometime so that we can make, get somewhat of a mature silage in August? That's what'll be odd to me is the stuff, where is that line that just isn't even close to making it and needs a frost and what'll actually make it?
Hey, the Olympics are going on, and it's been, my son has taken an interest in it. So this is probably really the first one he's been old enough to, pay attention to and understand as far, so it's kind of interesting to watch it through his eyes as he's going and, turning on the Olympics and watching certain things. It's like, oh, water soccer. oh, water polo,
Water soccer.
Because you never see water polo other than the Olympics. Or do you call it water basketball? So he was just very confused at the concept of what they were doing.
I watched just a 10-second clip, apparently, of synchronized diving.
Yeah.
And it was a side view, and it was two Chinese women doing the synchronized diving. And until they turned the camera to a face-on view.
Sure.
I literally did not know there was two people.
That was one person.
Yeah. Sure.
One of the cool things they're doing with that is with the camera now, you know, they do them their dive in real time and it looks similar, you know, the same. Like your eyes wouldn't tell. And then they do like a view of like they stop them and then put their like shadow moving kind of a thing. Right. You know, so like a ghost following them. And it those are crazy because they'll be like, oh, did you see that right there? This person was like, you know, 1 millimeter off or what. But yeah, some of these sports are wild. Like that they are sports. They're wild. Like the handball, have you guys watched that?
No.
You
get to just see a little bit of it because I always thought handball for some reason was like racquetball where you'd hit it with your hand off of a. I don't know if that was used to be called handball too, but this was like you mix the basketball with lacrosse because you dribble the ball and then there's a net and you got to like jump over around and like chuck it. There's a goalie and you got to like chuck it in this net. You got to see it because it's just the weirdest. Like even my kids are watching. Like, what even is this?
Right, what is that?
Like, what is happening here? And I'm like, I don't know. I've also never.
Where do you
seen...
do this for 4 years until
right,
you get
right,
yourself
right?
Ready?
Yeah, where's the training center for this one?
We know where the basketball guys are. The basketball women, like they're playing basketball all year long, right? But.
Even that, they have the 3-on-3 basketball.
Yep.
And that, too.
Apparently, we're not
like,
doing well.
Well, we're not.
We haven't won anything, apparently.
Yeah, they're like, why?
It's 3v3.
Why are they just playing half court? Like, what's going on?
But we can't have baseball. I mean.
Right. That'd be a good way to say
it. Next time around, there is.
There's going to be baseball?
I think they brought it back, I think.
So they're going to, like, do cricket and everything else then, too?
I mean, they have soccer. What's some of these is like, why do we stop at rugby and soccer right. and handball, like and basketball?
Because
like,
why
is baseball? Not
they don't gonna, take forever.
You know, right? Well, enough of them do the tournament like before the Olympics.
Right,
like, a lot
soccer
of
started.
Yeah,
before
and rugby is basically done almost.
Yeah,
a lot of them,
sure. they had the the final games
yeah.
during the Olympics, but yeah, a lot of it's before.
I'm sure some of it has to do that the baseball season's going on during, but I don't think Olympics cares maybe now. Anymore.
Well, there's not that many, like Japan and the U.S.
They would just, they
yeah. that are big.
Korea.
Yeah, big Cuba. In baseball and the other, yeah, Jamaican baseball team.
Yep.
Not Dominican.
Dominican,
yes.
All the
but I don't think Jamaica's got a.
It could be money, too, like a baseball stadium's a lot to build for.
Right.
1 week.
Where they already have soccer stadiums right. usually to use.
Right, because that's more of a international sport, I guess, that you would say, or more common in a lot of these countries.
So, Matt, you said your son is like, this is the first one. Like, what is your guys' recollection of your first Olympics? Like, which one?
Oof.
Well, remember that one where I think her name was like Carrie Strug, the gymnast?
Yeah, Strug.
Strug, yeah. Thank yeah. you, yes. So, and she had like a bum ankle,
yeah, and
then her coach like carried her,
right?
Because then they had the whole Saturday Night Live thing with Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry yeah. that they redid yeah. it, yeah.
That one you just remember being like, oh my god, like what an athlete to play through that pain,
yeah. But was that Atlanta or was that a different one?
Because I'm efforting
the U.S. had the Olympics in '96 at Atlanta. And that one I remember because that was kind of cool because it was here.
Barcelona.
That was in Barcelona.
92.
But yeah, I do remember that specific thing about that Olympics, but I couldn't tell you anything else. Or Bruce Jenner when he was still Bruce Jenner.
Yeah.
Being on Wheaties Box and that kind of stuff when they used to do all that with the athletes. And Dan Jansen, he was the speed skater.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that he kept.
Oh, yeah. For, oh, yeah.
Like I knew Olympians Wisconsin. Probably before I really watched yeah. a lot of Olympics, but yeah, I do remember the like the 96 Atlanta ones, and probably from there on
I do feel like the coverage now of this like on say they're showing more of these random sport, you know, the non like popular sports, like you can see some of it in other spots now. You
well,
got
if you
streaming
subscribe to
stuff,
Peacock
and
you can
yeah,
watch
people
like
that
six things
Peacock.
At once they
right.
have like the grid view really? Where you can watch like multiple
I was
sports.
Talking to a farmer that told me they're like, for this month, we subscribe to Peacock. Why not? It was like 12
sure.
bucks.
Sure.
And he's like, it's awesome. So I could see that.
It is kind of funny, like, that Snoop Dogg is a the unofficial U.S. mascot at the Olympics. They seem to be showing him all the time. And then how much do they pan to, like, different celebrities?
In the crowd, yeah.
Was it one of the no, it wasn't swimming. It was gymnastics, I think. We ended up watching one night, and Bill Gates was there, Natalie Portman, Jonathan Owens, obviously, because
Simone Biles.
Yeah. Like, Mr. Simone Biles, basically. Mr. Simone. So I had to explain to my wife, like, yeah, he played for the Packers last year. She's like, who would even know who his husband is? Like, well, the only reason we know is because he's
a Packer.
He was a Packer. But,
yeah, his team played last night, and he wasn't even there.
Wasn't there, yeah.
He got a pass.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, though. I mean,
you'd want that. I mean, she won gold, and it's preseason.
Right.
Right.
Like, you're going to... And he's not that good of a football player. Right.
So he wasn't making or breaking it, yeah.
Sure, they're just like, well, okay.
I did feel a little bad because they, like, panned to Bob Costas, who's there watching the Olympics. I mean, I don't know how long he's been covering it, and then this year they're like, nah, we're good, thanks.
What's your first Olympics you remember, Bill? 'Cause you got 88?
It was Seoul, okay. Korea, because I remember getting up to go to school, and, like,
they didn't time delay stuff.
It was on, like, right, in the morning, because it's whatever the time difference is. But yeah, that was my first recollection of. I was 10, so it's right in.
Right, that's right where Harrison's at 11. You know, the yep. And like I said, not that he hasn't seen it before, but this is the first time he's really, like, I think, understanding it and kind of getting into watching some of the different sports, because it is kind of cool to see all the different things. Is how often do you Winter Olympics too is like that, like when you can ski and shoot, and that's a sport. That's
right.
Just kind of a cool, like, right, weird thing that you're never going to do probably in your life, but it's kind of fun to watch.
Nobody cares about downhill skiing except for every 4 years.
Except,
right,
for, yeah, during the Winter Olympics. Or, you know, bobsledding, you don't really... It's not a thing outside of the Winter Olympics.
Something
really
very glamorous about the four-year,
yeah,
break, and then having sort of a two-year break where you got the winter, you know, yep, it's,
and it's different,
it's not like it's every 4 years. It's, say, every two there's an Olympics, and that is unique to it, that by the time it comes back around, you're like, oh, you're more excited for it. You want to see it because you just haven't.
I always think about the athletes themselves. Like, you get one shot every 4 years to do this.
Right.
And if you get hurt or you just have a bad night or whatever, like, you got to wait another four years. And, like, the age of some of these athletes, like, all of a sudden, like, well, this is it. Because 4 years from now, Lord knows what kind of stage of my life I'll be in. Or,
right.
Like, yeah, like, it's crazy that some of these, like, your whole life is driven around every 4 years.
So U.S. is currently at 39 medals. That's 9 gold, 16 silver, and 14 bronze. And we're only trailing China in golds. So we're in second.
They like had a really good end of this week getting golds because they were kind of further down.
What's funny is, like, when you get to the end, because with all the, like, the water, like, all these multiple, sure, like, the rounds, when they start wrapping up, like, in a week, that's when all of a sudden the medal count goes crazy, because then you get all these different sports that are finishing.
Well, has the track and field really started yet?
Because I haven't.
I mean, there's
seen
a lot of events for that,
right?
So.
No, that starts, I want to say, soon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because they're saying the runners are getting ready or something.
Sure.
That part of this, too, I think is unique. Is think of, like Katie Ledecky now is the most decorated swimmer.
Yep.
Which is super cool. And they even showed in the one event she's very good at, she owns, like, all the record times and stuff. But in swimming, you have the 400 meter whatever and the 200 meter. So you can get, like, so many more medals than, like you said, some of these sports that have rounds and you have to, right, play all these games. And then at the end, maybe.
Like, as a soccer athlete, you can get one medal.
Right.
Like,
you're
not probably competing in any other thing. Whereas, yeah, like you said, swimmers.
In running.
Track
and
field that way too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's like Michael Phelps is there watching. They kept panning to him in some of the swimming events and different stuff. And it's kind of funny because, like, for as much as they seem to like be panning to the crowd, Phelps is like on his phone all the time.
Nice.
I'm bored.
And it's like, well, is he bored or is he like taking pictures or like what? Because especially with the swimming stuff, he knows all these people, like,
right?
Yeah. From the years, so it's like, is he just like recording for them or it looks bad? It looks like he's just ignoring everything, but it's just kind of funny. So, all right, you guys ready to get into our topic? I mean, it is a good transition from U.S. Team USA to Liberty, but we're not talking about. Liberty is in, you know, give me liberty or give me death. We're talking glufosinate.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Or insurance.
We're not talking the insurance either. Yes. Or limu, emu.
And Doug. So, yeah. What do we got on liberty? It's
Bill and I were talking about this because the use this year, and I'm sure in some other areas that are listening, you know, in sort of Illinois, Iowa, I think their use has gone up over the last couple of years, and so has ours. But this year, to me, seems to be, we called it the year of the drone earlier. I think it's also the coming out party for Liberty of just, it's going to rival Roundup this year. And the Wade Omakin, the BASF, I got to say that slower, BASF rep in our area, when I was talking to him last week, he did say that Liberty use will probably, in soybeans, will probably exceed the use or equal use of Roundup.
I was going to say, that's important distinction is in beans.
In beans, yeah. Right. I mean, and just the use in general is way up. It's kind of changed. It's not brand new or anything. It's just the use of it with having more Roundup resistant weeds and now having more crops that are tolerant to it. We've been able to kind of find some more unique uses and use it in different ways. So the active always does get tricky because Roundup is glyphosate, and then Liberty is glufosinate. So it's just a tricky, sometimes it's even a hard word to say. I do like the trade name Liberty because it's a lot easier to say. And this year also a lot more other trade names that I've never heard of before. So Freedom was a new one for me. I had not heard of
a lot of Freedom. Cheetah out there.
Yeah, Cheetah I've heard of before. That one.
So you're saying, Todd, this year Liberty is like the Kool-Aid man just breaking through the wall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like the Liberty, the Freedom, those kind of go together well. Then you've got Cheetah Finale. Sounds like, yep, it's the end. We're done. Last thing you got to spray. Interline is an interesting one. That one I got nothing on. Interline, that doesn't, not really sure where that one came out of. But yeah, it is interesting. You know, Roundup, there's so many different generic names.
I would say Liberty rivals that. There's
getting
a lot,
up there too,
right?
Yeah,
but a lot of them, Roundups, we used more of the generics. Liberty,
right.
You know, a lot of it
was Liberty.
We tend to use the Liberty.
Well, there was a time, excuse me, a handful of years ago where, like, it was in short supply.
Yes. Right.
Like, the cotton market was using it so heavily that we couldn't even get it here to be able to use it. And that's really changed because you're right, Todd. It's everywhere.
I would agree with you on that, Bill. I did not think of that as the coming out party also has to do with price and availability.
Right.
And in the past 5 years, it's had either not been available, and then obviously when it's not available, price fluctuates and goes really high. So we also had some price where it kind of priced itself out of the market. This year, it was both available and reasonably priced, so it was able to be used more widespread. I didn't ever hear of, you know, this particular year in 2024, any sort of like, oh, it's going to be hard to get, or I don't know. It was just very easy to get and was there.
The really neat part about it is I feel like it's very an easy product to use. I mean, we're going to go into some tricks and things that you have to do with it, but like it's basically Liberty and AMS. Like, there's not all this crop oil or MSO or what rate or how thick or what if you're putting dual with it and like all this other crap that Enlist and Roundup and all this other stuff we have to deal with. And but you know, we want hot weather,
right? that's the other part, is a lot of the herbicides, when it gets hot, they, you know, we have weird things can happen when it gets too hot or humid. Where this one, it wants the high humidity, it wants the heat, which is kind of neat too, because about the time we're spraying it, it's going to be hot.
Right.
So that I like. And then it used to be, it seemed like we need to use a lot of water with it. So at least 15 gallons, but I'm starting to recommend 20 gallons of water as carrier across the board. And I, and there too, Bill, I swear guys used to complain. Like, they'd just be like, I'm not doing that.
Right.
And you'd be like, what? Nah, I got to switch nozzles.
It's
and
an
whatever,
extra two,
you know,
loads.
And, yeah, right. And this year I had like zero complaints about it. So I, you know, from the co-op side, I think it's helped their hot loading more. And the guy, you know, for them to hot load, yeah, it's a, probably an extra load at time, or they got to use, do more. But for them, that doesn't seem to be a problem. And then say my farmers that spray their own, them too, it was just, oh, flip the nozzle and
do you
now
think
I'll
it's
go 20 gallons.
Do you think it's like the advent of more fungicides too that
could be,
you know, we're getting used to higher gallonage because of other things other, we're doing?
I think we have seen too that it just, we understand that with water hemp, we need the coverage. Like, coverage becomes so important on some of these weeds, and we're not getting that. And they are seeing that, okay, yeah, when I'm doing it right, it is working better.
Right.
So, yeah, that's another thing that when you're spraying this the right way, you need to, you know, loves heat, you need that water. And then the other thing with it is it does seem to like 4 hours of sun. So some guys will use the banker hours, you know, spray from 8 to 5. And then stop, because after you get past that, it just doesn't seem to work as well. So, and I've seen that seem to be important. But that's with any herbicide, technically. It's just this one is more important that you have that.
Definitely. I'd even quit by 3.
Really? You're even saying that early? What kind of banker do you have over there?
Really,
or what time
really
are you starting in the morning?
One.
Are you pushing?
No.
Still
no.
8 to 3.
Sleep in.
So height, like
get
a school
early.
Hours
yeah,
is what
like,
you're saying.
Yeah.
So yes. All right.
And maybe even like first recess at school and then go.
Right during when it's real windy, that's when you're saying it. Not in the early morning when it's calm, and not at night when it's less wind.
Yeah, when winds are at their peak.
No, but
so then you can spray 2 fields at once.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
No, that's not how it works.
Obviously, watch wind on this one, but that is one good part, too, is it doesn't seem to drift in general. You know, it doesn't have the inversion problems, doesn't have the drift problem. Now, obviously, if it's super windy, it's going to move, but that is one unique thing about this herbicide. So, and I think, Bill, it does play well with others, which is cool. There's a lot of different sort of tank mix options that
I feel like
seem
Enlist doesn't play well with others at all. Like Clethodim, even Roundup to some degree, but more so Clethodim for sure. And then I can take you to a field 5 miles from our headquarters here that looks like we put Extend on it was just the heat, Enlist, and we put some kind of dual. I don't know what it was. Some flavor of dual and then some surfactants. And it's like, I've never seen
drawstringing or
just
cupping.
Knocked the leaves right off the plant.
Sure.
Like I just smoked them. And I think it was the heat and the oil. And we had the oil,
right.
The
oil
dual.
And the dual.
It just, we added some oil and added oil in the, you know, obviously the oil in the dual just.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of cupping this year, it seems like, from Enlist. It seems like more than before, which is kind of weird.
Cupping's always hard because you can't decide where, you know, is there something in the, was in the tank, drift, was it carryover, was it, like, it's hard. But I agree with you, Matt, that there's been more cupping than we've had.
Some of it's been like a week and it's fine, and other stuff seems to hang on a little bit more. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, antagonism's always that kind of thing that's in the back of your mind of like, the more I'm putting into this tank, am I going
to
cause an issue?
We're back.
Because some guys are going kitchens, like they're throwing Liberty and List, Clethodim, Dual, you know, they're
fungicide.
Yeah, they're putting everything
micros.
In. We should throw some insecticide just for fun, right?
You're going across it.
I am, what is good, I'm getting piggyback burnout on some guys that are saying, like, oh my God, I got to throw these six things in the tank. Like, what, how about I just pick three of them? And usually it's, you know, the herbicides or it's one, it, and that has actually, we're just getting to be where it's so much
it's
stuff.
Back to spraying in the, like, early 90s, yeah. So 90s, early 2000s, when we didn't have Roundup Ready really yet. It's back to beans cost a lot of money to spray.
Right.
Right.
A lot.
So Liberty does have a few sort of unique uses because of the trait packages in the crop. So we found some ways that can work for you as a grower, but may not, depending what your crop, you know, is what you have planted for a crop. So one of them is if you have a conventional or non-Liberty, you know, so say it's just straight Roundup or basically a corn planted the year before that doesn't have Liberty in it and you're planting Liberty Link soybeans, you can then kill the volunteer corn with Liberty. So one of the things I did this year was a grower that has a lot of conventional corn, and then we just went Liberty and Enlist on E3 beans, killed all the volunteer corn, and got a really pretty good control of grasses and did okay, you know, on very good on broadleaves. So, and on water hemp. And one of the unique part with that too was they had some fields that they weren't able to get the pre on, and then it was too wet for the early post. So we went the old school, like Roundup pop can weed height, pop can beans-ish, and just sprayed, you know, Liberty Enlist, and it did actually a very good job. So one of the unique things with this is we can kill volunteer corn if used properly and you track what your corn varieties were.
Sure.
That's been a nice bonus.
Yes. It's been nice. And like we said, it seems to be that Enlist and Clethodim don't play well together in the tank. So if we can pull that Clethodim, it also is a good sort of works well together.
And Clethodim's kind of a slower killer too, yes, to some degree, where this works a little faster. So I think that's nice. And it seems like guys are pushing later and later to want to kill their volunteer corn. So we're not killing 4-inch or even 6-inch corn anymore. We're killing like
8-knee-high corn.
Yeah.
Right. You're right with that, Bill, with the pre's and early posts. A lot of time that's too early to throw your corn killer in. It was pre's are, obviously, right. And then the early posts can be, so then we're waiting until this sort of last cleanup spray to throw it in, and they're much bigger. So that has been a very good, like I said, you got to track your varieties, know what you got out there, and how you're going to attack that. It does also, if you're planting soybeans on alfalfa, you know, a lot of, and say it's Roundup Ready alfalfa, I've seen I wouldn't say Liberty smokes alfalfa or it's great, but
at least helps.
I've also seen, but in Enlist,
it's
take
not
it too,
great on perennials, right?
So right.
Potentially, it's going to burn the foliage off,
right?
And that it may regrow, but at least you're burning.
It burns back, yeah. So then basically to the if you got Liberty Link beans, E3, and then Extend Flex. So not just straight Extend, but if you have an Extend Flex that has both traits in it for Liberty and for dicamba. So what's unique with that was I had a situation this year where a guy was doing a custom job for somebody that had Extend Flex beans, didn't clean out his drill when he was done. And the guy, you know, it wasn't the farmer that he was doing the custom thing for, was fine with it. You know, it wasn't this sort of weird, that can happen. He just wanted to keep going, didn't clean out the drill. And then he told me about it, but he said, yeah, that guy had some other beans and I just threw my E3s on top of it. And he said they were conventional. I'm like, oh, I'm like, well, then your E3s are useless, right, basically. Right. So I started asking more questions of, well, what, when you say what he had was conventional, they were like literally like, were you doing plenish beans or what was it? He said, no, they were like Extend beans. I'm like, okay, were they Extend Flexes? And he did his homework, you know, later found out, yes, they were Extend Flexes. I said, okay, so then we have two traits here that do match up and we can spray Liberty on those soybeans. So then we sprayed Liberty alone and timed it out right, and it did really well. You know, it worked. to that way. So there is some sort of unique things now with these traits that we got to track better as we're getting more herbicidal traits in this for the year you're spraying it and for the following year.
Yeah, I had a, it's not really related to Liberty, but the Enlist side, I had a guy literally pull up to me on the road while I was scouting a field and asked me about like Enlist, like, I've got E3 beans and I'm spraying Enlist 1. Just is a there
random,
a difference?
Is this
yeah, it was just like
guy.
Random guy pulled up in his truck. Saw the sticker on my truck and was like asking questions about the traits. And it's like, yeah, it gets really confusing if you're not staying up on it. Like,
I feel like the BT side of traits have stacked, and that's somewhat confusing. But you just got to know, like, well, does it get this bug or not?
Right.
And they've kind of you kind of know that. But these, you know, a lot, like Vorceed now will have Liberty in it. Well,
yep.
It doesn't say it in the name anymore as much, and yeah, it's just trickier.
We were having that talk with a farmer. Oh, crap, we forgot to throw clethodim in. And we're like, well, what was your corn last year? And it's like, oh, I think it was a DeKalb VT2. And I'm like, nice.
Then you're good.
Then we're good.
Yep.
We don't need it because unless, you know, it's not a smart stack, so it didn't bring it on the Pioneer Genetics or the DuPont side. It's like, yep, we're good to go. So let's, and a couple of days later, he called me. He's like, yep, it's dying.
It's going down. So, yeah. That is one. So sort of a note, the Corteva genetics in general in corn are going to have the Liberty trait, yep, in general. The DeKalb genetics, like Bill said, the triples and some of those do, but when you get to the doubles and the Roundup only, it doesn't. So it is something that you could kind of track over time in different companies. Syngenta as well would be, if you got a double or less, you probably are okay, you know, with not having that trait to worry about. So
Matt, an epiphany I had, and I don't know why we missed this, but you know, we struggle so much with interseeding.
I had a guy this year spray Liberty ahead of his interseeding.
Yeah, like, how come we can't, you know, what do we use to kill weeds ahead of interseeding? And it's like, why haven't we done this like 3 years ago?
So are
we
interseeding? So that's a good pivot into sort of corn that's got Liberty treated,
right,
and you're saying, yep, you got your corn planted. It was always hard to, you know, if you put too much residual down, that's going to affect
the interseeding.
So you can maybe do a little residual. But in what you're saying is you wait till right ahead of the interseeding, you probably do a Roundup Liberty spray.
Yep.
Or even just Liberty.
Liberty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're doing a lot of Verdict up ahead.
Sure. So that would be Outlook Sharpen.
Yep.
And I could see that, so that'd be early, you're saying, with some Outlook,
because like
Sharpen's going to burn.
Yeah, like,
so that's obviously
a pre. And then
post.
We're just coming back with Roundup, and we're like, okay, well, let's try 2 ounces of status just to see how much it affects it. And it, you know, it didn't really affect the interseeding, but it really didn't kill the water hemp either. And it's like, okay, well, I guess we're living with it. And then this year, it's like, well, duh.
Yeah.
Let's just use Liberty on our Liberty Link corn. It works. And no setbacks, no anything like that. Just plant your thing and go, you know? So that was...
Yeah, it's something we've done with Roundup, but we've got so much resistance that
Roundup
just wasn't the ticket anymore. And I've done like Roundup 2,4-D and other stuff where, you know, you get a little bit of residual from the 2,4-D, so you got to wait a little bit. But even then, it's nice to be able to have that 1-2 of like spray and go so that you can hopefully get it established and get the cover crop going to help prevent more from coming because you don't have residual out there.
What stage are you doing that sort of V1?
It's more about the interseed, right? We're trying to interseed
when they have time to intercede.
V2 to V whatever.
Yeah, V5. V1 to V4, V5, yeah.
So Liberty Link corn, the label will say up to V6 corn with the Liberty. So that is one that's maybe a little different than your status or Diflex, your dicambas with safeners. Those we can go up to V10 corn.
Yeah.
So one of the things there too that I've been watching more is trying to do the Liberty a little bit earlier. Not, you know, our Hail Mary savior is potentially going to be the status or the Diflex way at the end, Whereas Liberty, I'd like to use, you know, say a V4, V5, you know, obviously up to this, you know, it's labeled to V6. So that is one of the more things you got to watch too. And, you know, bigger weeds, it'll take down an 8-inch water hemp, but the 8-inch water hemp will come back. But a 3 or 4 inch water hemp, it seems like it can take down and it's gone. So that also pairs well with that too, that it'll burn it back and the weeds are smaller to work a little better. On soybeans, the label is through R1. So that also is kind of it's similar to Enlist that way.
And I do see that getting pushed this year big time.
Guys are, pushing
it
that.
It just seems like there's a lot of beans out there that are still getting sprayed.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I had 15-inch beans that didn't canopy until probably 2 weeks ago. And they were planted relatively on time. Yeah. And they just sat there.
30-inch beans are... They're never canopied, and so I would agree with you though, Bill, that watch the label on this, just because it's, and get it on kind of earlier than you might think, because this isn't like a wait till the way end
right.
type of herbicide, you know, for the label side of it.
I would tell farmers that this winter now, or this fall even, right, because in a month or two we're going to have guys already starting to plan for 25. Really look at Liberty in your bean portfolio next year, because it's more flexible, it plays nice with others, and I think, frankly, it takes down bigger weeds. You know, Enlist kind of curls it up and then makes it look like it's dead, and then it comes back. I mean, my scouts last year were calling it the Jesus weed after Enlist, because it kind of gets sick and then it comes back to life. And
what's unique about these two, so with Liberty, it's you'll burn it back, and then it'll kind of regrow from that base or those bottom, when I say it, water hemp, it'll regrow and kind of make that real menorah style, like big, you know,
yeah, the bushy
water hemp.
Yep.
And then with Enlist, it seems like we can make it touch its toes and go down, but the green stays there, and then it just slowly kind of creeps back up. So with the 1-2 punch of these two, now I've had it where sometimes one of them works a little better than the other, and it still doesn't seem, but it just does seem like it's working well. So that's a good way to use it. It's also been nice, as I've been able to pull on my soybeans a lot of Roundup just out of the tank. Like, we're not even using the Roundup. You don't need, that was always hard. It was, well, let's just throw it in because, you know, it's cheap and it works. Well, now we've been able to show farmers that you don't need it in there, that Liberty will get a lot of your grasses. And then if you do have the clethodim in there as well to get a Liberty Link volunteer corn, then you really have something that's going to get the grasses too. So I would agree with you, Bill, that it's something that it's got to be on your radar to use it.
If you got quack, then you want to have the Roundup in, but otherwise it's doing well on a wide spectrum of broadleaves and grasses.
The other thing to track for next year is your traits. So one of the things I wish I did better in 2023 was have all the, you know, I maybe had variety down, but to just have the trait, the herbicidal traits, you know, the bug traits for the following year doesn't matter, but knowing the herbicidal traits from the last year's crop, you know, and I might even think of adding that to my crop plan a little bit, of just 2023 herbicide traits of the previous crop. So I know how I can go after volunteers.
How you can kill the volunteers, yeah.
That's be good. And then, you know, obviously for the following year, while guys are planting, because not all the time, you know, especially in corn now, in beans typically, you know, hopefully you did it right where all your beans have Liberty and there's some overlap. But in corn, you might have, you know, a double stack that doesn't have Liberty, but a triple stack that does. And so making sure you track that correctly and
can't
stuff.
Double stamp your triple stamp.
No.
Just make sure you get your cover sheet and your TPS report.
And then new for kind of now, I mean, it's basically pending EPA approvals, I believe still, but there's a new Liberty coming out, and the BSF rep, Wade Omakin, was also telling me about this, and it was kind of neat because it's going to be a lower use rate. So it basically, so it's similar, if you want to think about, to S-metolachlor, to your dual 2-magnum when that came out, when you had all that isomer that was the right sort of isomer of, and we're not going to get chemistry here, but this contains L-glufosinate, which is a more active isomer and thus allows a lower use rate. So it's going to be called Liberty Ultra 1.76SL, and it's sort of a next generation Liberty. And so we're able to go from 32 ounces, which is sort of the current rate, to 24 ounces. So we'll have a potential reduction that way, or just less jugs and, you know, that kind of thing. So that should be, you know, nice. Anytime we can have less jugs, it's nice, or, you know, maybe something we're able to throw in a little less. Now, what will get tricky with this is when the Roundups did this, it always was like, well, which regular Roundup?
Yeah.
You know, is it Power Max 3? Is it this? So as we get more into this type of Liberty in the concentration change, that'll be tricky. But I think I'm going to just say Liberty Ultra or not. I think that's how I'm going to try to, you know, I'm hoping these will add like, it seemed like in the Roundups they added a number after it, you know, like a 5 or Power Max 3.
Or, yeah.
You know, yep. But you had some that had the 5 pound after it. So this, I think, will be with the word Ultra, and then you'll know to use that lower use rate.
Sure. All right. There you go. That's a little breakdown on Liberty and the potential for its coming out party that we kind of seen the start of this year. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So today we're going to do a GDU update, just to kind of let you know where things are. So did the usual May 1st run here. So here in Seymour, we're looking at 1510, so 1,510 GDUs. Normal's 1495, so we're about 15 above normal. And within the next 2 weeks, we're expected to hit 1785 for GDUs. In Sun Prairie, they're at 1719 for GDUs. Their normal is 1565, so they're 154 GDUs above normal. And they're expected to get to 1999. That was a good year in the next 2 weeks. And then up in Crivets, we've got 1446. Their normal is 1336, so they're 110 GDUs above normal. And they're expected to get to 1694 in the next 2 weeks. So we're actually, when I looked at it for the last 2 years, at least in Seymour, we're at like the same GDUs we were this time last year, which I thought was interesting.
Completely different years, right?
Right, totally different years.
Right, it doesn't necessarily feel like that. So that's interesting. Obviously, the big thing that's changed is your planting date.
Right. And that's why, just for Seymour,
okay,
I ran, and this is a known planting date that I have on a farm, 6/20, so June 20th. If you planted in June 20th, you're at 847 growing degree units, which is actually 31 below normal for that period. So there was kind of a cool period in June, and so you are not quite half if you're late planted of the GDUs that you'd have if you were early May. So
yeah, and we can see that out there.
It's obvious.
They do seem like they're playing a little bit of catch up versus what you'd think, where you'd think they would be at. But that's why we changed day lengths. That's why we talked all that on varieties. To be honest, why we haven't done a GDU update until now, because
it's been whack.
It's been crazy, yeah.
Well, and we finally been getting the really warm weather here to kind of push those later plantings. So that's hopefully going to help catch up in that. So from June 20th, the next 14 days, we're going to hit 1122. So we'll be catching up a little bit in the next 2 weeks, according to the forecast here. But still going to be running behind. We're still going to need to make up ground this fall if... Hopefully we get it's the tale of two Septembers. We either get like the temperatures shut down and a cool, wet September, or sometimes we get a warm, wet, or dry September. So
no, September is that weird bridge month where if we get it a little bit more like August, this would really work. Yeah.
Right. It'll.
But if it's a little more like October,
yeah,
you know, oof, we're so it'll be an interesting one.
All right, now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. And since we're talking about liberty, we figured we'd do the history of glufosinate. So glufosinate was first derived from cultures of a soil bacteria called Streptomyces viridochromogensia and was found to be active as a herbicide in greenhouse tests in 1976, and it was brought to market in 1984. That's a good year right there. Today, it is registered for use to control weeds in a variety of crops worldwide, including soybeans, corn, canola, cotton, which have been modified through genetic engineering to be tolerant to glufosinate. The primary mode of action of glufosinate ammonium is the inhibition of the enzyme glutamine synthetase. So this enzyme catalyzes the synthesis of glutamine from glutamate and ammonia and plays a central role in plant nitrogen metabolism.
So I think that's interesting. You're so actually just like nitrogen, you're cutting off the food to it. Yes.
You're done. Yep.
Yeah.
No more food for you.
No more metabol.
No, it just had its 40-year birthday on
yeah.
the market.
Yeah.
So it's
so old. What's its 5-year plan? Not die.
It's over the hill.
No over more hill. Metabolism.
Yep, its metabolism's going. Man, that's why they got to come up with the Liberty Ultra.
Ultra.
Yes. Metabolism starting to slow down a little bit.
It's to help the testosterone.
Yeah, Liberty hasn't been staying as fit as it used to be. Yeah. It needs a little help. Too close to home.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you to our subscribers out there. Please tell a farmer friend about the podcast. It's really, really easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts or on your Android phone. You have to get an app like YouTube Music or Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll do some cool beans, that's corny, and some current events. So cool beans?
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week. The iconic butter cow display at the Ohio State Fair is honoring athletes with the Olympics going on. So this year's butter cow at the Ohio State Fair was celebrating the hard work and dedication of our nation's athletes. Athletes are dedicated to perfecting their craft, pushing their limits, and striving for excellence, according to Jenny Crabtree, Senior Vice President of Communications for the American Dairy Association Mideast. Elite athletes become role models, inspiring us all to chase our dreams and believe in our potential. The display, which is crafted from 2,000 pounds of butter, features the iconic butter cow and calf duo sporting butter medallions, as well as 4 life-size athletes. A track and field para-athlete at the starting line, a gymnast doing a handstand on the balance beam, which that one, just looking at the picture, it's like, how do they even do that with butter? It's got to be some sort of skeleton or something inside holding it up.
How does the arms not
right? You'd think
collapse.
The weight would get it.
Yep.
And then they also have a cyclist rounding a curve and a high jumper clearing the bar. So every year they do something different that they've never done before, and this year it was conveying the true-to-life motion of each athlete in action, said lead sculptor Paul Brook of Cincinnati. We had to get very creative with the armatures to support the massive weight of the butter. For example, there's a hidden armature to hold up the cyclist as he leans into the curve, and the high jumper is actually hanging from the ceiling like Spider-Man. So he appears to be jumping over the bar. So Brook and his team, consisting of Tammy Burke of Westchester, Aaron Burham of Columbus, and dairy farmer Matt Davison of Sydney, as well as Joe Metzler of Auburn, spent approximately 450 hours to complete the display, with 375 of those hours dedicated to sculpting inside a 46-degree cooler, according to the American Dairy Association Mideast. So nothing like working in a freezer or a cooler refrigerator to sculpt your butter. That's, I wonder what they do with the butter afterwards.
Yeah, I was wondering that.
Do they give hand out buns and you just walk through and like smear your bun on the?
No, sweet corn.
With the life size athletes, that could go very wrong very fast. It's always cool. Like the butter sculpture thing is always interesting. But I did notice something with the Olympics that I saw on social media somewhere that Wisconsin or somewhere in the U.S. should have thought of first. And there's a Italian athlete that is sponsored by a cheese company in Italy. And so they made her, had her do like a photo shoot with a bunch of wheels of cheese.
I think she's just sponsored by like Parmesan cheese. Like it's almost like the Parmesan people.
Yeah.
It's not like a, it's not even like the brand. It's just the, like they should have just got Gouda to sponsor an athlete. Yeah, or there you like, go. Like,
but yeah, I feel like that's a missed opportunity that we could have had someone ride a cow in on like the boats for the opening ceremonies or, yeah, I don't know. But anyway, that's our cool beans this week. Our That's Corny. AGCO is selling off grain and protein brands for about $700 million. So it's a strategic divestment of grain and protein businesses, which will net the company that $700 million expected to close the end of this year. So it's selling the majority of grain and protein business, which includes its GSI grain bin storage and monitoring technology brand, to American Industrial Partners in an all-cash transaction valued at that $700 million. Boy, that's a heck of a cash deal right there.
Is that a cashier's check?
Yeah.
Is it like Scrooge McDuck?
Is it just series of suitcases? It's like, let's make a deal. Or no, deal or no deal. There's just a bunch of models that show up with suitcases full of cash.
I'm thinking they're armed guards.
The company is expected to incur a loss on this sale in the range of $450 to $475 million. So it'll include AGCO's five primary grain and protein brands, which is GSI, Automated Production, Cumberland, Cimbria, and Techno. So according to AGCO, it'll help them streamline and sharpen their focus of award-winning agriculture machinery and precision ag technologies, which underpins a long-term focus on high growth, high margin, and high free cash flow generating businesses.
Didn't even know AGCO was in the grain business.
Yeah. No, when you think of AGCO, you think more of the equipment side anyway, but it will exclude AGCO's grain and protein business in China and is anticipated to close, like I said, by the end of this year, subject to regulatory approval and other customary closing conditions. So hopefully the people that are reliant on those grain and protein businesses find the new owners to be good to work with. But that can always be kind of a big question mark. All right, and then to wrap things up today, we'll talk our Field Good Friday. And this week, we're talking about a new heart for a girl named Lexi. So a 4-H-er sold her market lamb for over $27,000 to help her friend who needed a heart. So when Lexi Anderson's market lambs did not make the sale this year, her friends Hattie and Holly Hargrave decided to donate one of their lambs for the sale to help the friend who is currently on the wait list for a heart transplant. In December 2023, 11-year-old Lexi Anderson's life turned upside down after getting dizzy and blacking out on the basketball court. She went through a series of tests before being diagnosed with restrictive cardiomyopathy and placed her on the heart transplant list. For an extremely active girl who loves basketball, volleyball, softball, swimming, rollerblading, fishing, riding horses, and showing dairy cattle and sheep, slowing down has been incredibly hard, according to her mom. She's on extreme restrictions now. She's allowed to ride horses and show cattle and sheep, but she's been told to pay attention to her body and stop if it's causing issues. She's currently receiving care at Children's Hospital of Milwaukee for her heart issues and is on the 1B list. Patients classified as 1B usually do not have to stay in the hospital for inpatient care, but these individuals are given second highest priority when on the heart transplant wait list because of the disease causes a thickening of the heart walls, Doctors want to find a heart for her soon. And so that brings us to the fair. And since she could show livestock, she has to approach shows differently. So she had two minor episodes at the Barron County Fair in Rice Lake. Thankfully, she had her cousins on standby to help grab the sheep if she had problems. Her cousins did come to her rescue, but Lexi is such a stubborn girl with extreme determination that she did not give up and continued showing later into the evening. When her market lambs just missed the sale by two spots, her friends Hattie and Holly Hargrave wanted to help. They were both sad for her and instantly said, yeah, let's do this. So they brought the sheep in. I'm just trying to find the part here. So the first buyer bought the lamb for $55 a pound, then sent it back to be sold again. Second time it was sold for $50 per pound. He waited, then donated it back until the end of the sale. When he did, the third buyer bought it for $43 a pound, sent it back again. Fourth and final buyer bought the lamb for $30 per pound, and the result was $27,412 to help the Anderson family through this unimaginable hard time. So we live in a wonderful, caring community that steps up to help each other. According to Hargrave, we told people, or we never thought it would sell for that much. It was amazement when they tallied the final sale price. So that's pretty cool.
It's, yeah. Matt and I, and Bill knows the Hargrave family a little bit too, and they're, the Hargrave family are the nicest people you'll ever meet.
Yep.
And great people, and to do that and for people to step up at a county fair like that is just, you guys have probably been in those moments where they're sort of hair raising and you just can't believe what's going on around you. And that had to be one of them. So I told the Hargraves, because if you think of the 4-H motto, basically it's like you give your heart for greater loyalty and health for better living.
Yep.
So, and then there's the whole, all that, but like literally you're doing that for somebody, which is sort of cool. So two of the H's were definitely covered that day in the 4-H, in the 4-H ring. So it's really cool.
Yeah. All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for meeting you guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So today we talked about liberty and the options that are in soybeans for weed control there. Our spotlight was a GDU update. Ag History Minute, we talked the history of glufosinate or liberty. Cool beans this week was the butter cow display at the Ohio State Fair celebrating athletes. That's corny was AgCo divesting its grain and protein brands. And our Field Good Friday was friends helping friends and donating their lamb to help a young girl with heart issues. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.